Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
A Factual Data Creation Facility production. Welcome to the OFNT podcast, episode 246, which I'm calling Joining the Peloton. If you celebrate it, I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Here it was just my lovely wife, son, and I. The day was quiet and just the way I like it. My email inbox exploded with Black Friday deals, but like previous years, I didn't purchase anything. Now, I had my eyes on some things, you know, mostly tech stuff, but none of them went down in price, so that made it easier to keep my money in our bank account. Well, the unpacking continues, and at this point, it seems endless. But what are you going to do? If you're wondering when I'm going to start this episode, well, wonder no more. It starts right now. Tech news. Due to the holiday here in the good old US of A, it's been an exceptionally slow week for tech news.
Yes.
It'll probably be kind of slow through the new year.
Aww.
I'll just make stuff up in order to fill in the gaps. just kidding. Or am I? Anyway, my tech news feeds this week were overflowing with Black Friday deals. In other words, native ads for particular products. The good thing is that these type of articles have reached fever pitch and should be slowing down. First up, MacRumors.com has an article with the following headline, quote, iPhone sales stall despite global smartphone recovery, unquote. The article states that worldwide smartphone shipments increased by 6.2% this year, while Apple iPhone shipments grew by just 0.4%. The author of the article places the blame for this on key markets like China, where local companies like Xiaomi and Huawei are investing in hardware and software, as well as having prices lower than Apple's iPhones. Both Huawei and Xiaomi aren't available in North America. Huawei, because of its connection to the communist government of China, and Xiaomi, because if that company did enter the U.S. market, it would be immediately sued for intellectual property and patent violations. Xiaomi is best known for blatant copying of iPhone features. So it was up to Android manufacturers to boost the global market, and boosted they did by some 7.6%. That was through some strong performances in Asia, Latin America, the Middle East, and Africa. They accomplished this by offering compelling products with an average selling price of but $295 versus Apple's $1,000 plus premium positioning. Well, springtime will bring the new model of the iPhone SE, and with it, I predict an increase in iPhone sales. For around $500, consumers will get a fairly modern, large-screened phone with Apple's latest silicon and 8 gigs of RAM, which will enable the SE4 to run AI smoothly. Speaking of AI, I think Apple thought the predicted AI supercycle was upon us. But it wasn't, and probably won't ever happen. More on that later in the Tech I'm Using section. The iPhone 16 was a boring upgrade cycle with not much to make a consumer want to buy one. We've reached a point where smartphones are as powerful as needed, even overpowered for the average person. Upgrading the processor and camera just won't do it any longer. AndroidAuthority.com is reporting that last week's news, which showed Google Pixel phones increasing market share from 4.6% to 12.9% in North America, was wrong.
Aww.
Apparently, that was due to the way StatCounter.com website gathers data. Anyway, Google Pixels currently sit at 8.55% of the market. And that's a gain, but compared to Samsung's 23.81% and Apple's 55.69% share of the market, There's nothing to be real happy about. As I've said previously, the iPhone SE4 is arriving real soon now, and that will gain some market share for Apple at the expense of Google. I'm still tempted to get my hands on a Pixel phone, but I haven't yet come up with an excuse to do so. Well, an excuse that the one whom must be obeyed would accept. The problem I have with Google is that the company isn't consistent with its products. They have a habit of dropping them like bad habits. Take the recent announcement that, going forward, Chromebooks will be running Android. You know, Chrome OS is a secure, mature operating system, but Google is dumping it. The product that Google dropped that I used the most was Google Hangouts. The Messenger app did everything but was condemned to a slow death. Another thing with Google, they need to hire better engineers to bring the company's Tensor chips up to serious competition levels. It's not the power of the chip, it's the efficiency that needs the most work. Continuing with Google and AndroidAuthority.com, Google Messages, which has become the de facto standard for RCS messaging, has added a stop button in order to make it easier to unsubscribe from RCS business messages and spam. Well, you can already do this by blocking and reporting each individual RCS ad or spam. You know, what's the difference?
I don't know.
That you receive. That's what you have to do within iMessages at this time. Adding a dedicated button may seem like a small improvement, but it will make it easier and ultimately save time. I hope Apple, air quotes, borrows this feature. I could be wrong, but I believe Apple has already lost the RCS standards race and might as well give in to the Google method of handling it. Apple has no one to blame but themselves. The company fought implementing RCS until being forced to do so by the EU. Strangely, I still have contacts that use Android phones that don't have RCS enabled. I know these people have modern Android phones, mostly Samsung, so I don't know why they haven't done so at this time. I've yet to receive the so-called business RCS messages or RCS spam, but receive plenty of plain text business and spam messages. Again, according to AndroidAuthority.com, you know, must be their week, the Federal Communications Commission, better known as the FCC, has just approved a plan to bring cellular phone service to every corner of the United States.
What?
Whoa!
Of course, to be able to do this, satellites orbiting around the Earth will have to be used. But whose satellites? Well, of course, it'll be the President-elect's first buddy's gear, the one and only Elon Musk's Starlink service satellites. However, this newly approved satellite phone service will not be available to all U.S. cellular providers.
No.
Only T-Mobile received a license to do so. Well, T-Mobile is my cellular provider of choice, so I guess I'm lucky.
Yay!
The area in which I've just moved to has horrible service from T-Mobile. That's when I actually have service at all. I'm just wondering if this satellite service will cause my monthly bill to increase. Apple iPhones, well, ever since the iPhone 14, have had the capability to use satellites for messaging, and Google has followed suit with their latest Pixel phones. Other phone manufacturers from around the world have also gotten this capability. I guess this is the future knocking at the door. The upcoming iPhone SE I keep harping about is based on the iPhone 14, so it will have the ability to use cellular service via satellite. Man, that SE4 just keeps getting more attractive, doesn't it?
Yes.
A new mobile carrier named Cape is launching what it describes as an ultra-secure cell phone service, unquote. This service was designed for people who are at high risk for digital attacks. Journalists and politicians were given as examples in this article from, yet again, AndroidAuthority.com. Geez, I could have saved myself a lot of time by just going to that website instead of pawing through all the black market native ads disguised as news articles on my feeds. Cape has plans of bringing the self-described ultra-secure phone service to the rest of us peasants next year. I smell to be made. Cape is what you would call a mobile virtual network operator, also known as an MVNO, who relies on AT&T's and Verizon's cell tower network. Cape services are already available to government employees, probably by way of a big, juicy government contract. According to Cape, they can provide this secure service because they run their own mobile core, which is the software that controls sensitive data in cellular communications. Well, this all sounds great. But I have a feeling that a nice backdoor for intelligence agencies has been left askew within the Mobile Corps. But hey, what do I know? Now, I do know from experience while using MVNOs as my cellular provider that if the network they're using becomes congested, well, priority is given to the owner's traffic. In this case, that would be AT&T and Verizon. No matter, I'm sure this so-called ultra-secure network will be deemed too expensive for us normal folk anyway. In an article not from AndroidAuthority.com, AndroidPolice.com reports that leading smart ring company Aura has teamed up with Dexcom, who are a global leader in glucose biosensing. Dexcom has also invested $75 million into Aura, giving the small Finnish company some capital to work with. You know, at first I thought the goal of this partnership was to eventually bring glucose monitoring to the Aura smart rings.
No.
This capability, which is essential for diabetics, is considered the holy grail of consumer blood sugar monitoring that's being chased hardest by the giant fruit company that we all know and love. The capability to monitor blood glucose without invasive methods, like pricking one's skin, would be revolutionary. What this partnership is actually doing is giving the Aura smart ring the capability of reading blood sugar levels in tandem with Dexcom's Stello line of monitors, which is attached to a person's arm using the invasive method I already described.
Ouch!
I guess Apple can breathe a sigh of relief now. The ability for blood glucose monitoring using the Dexcom Stello monitor and Aura ring will be coming sometime in 2025. Tech I'm using. Well, last Wednesday was the day of delivery for my much-anticipated Peloton indoor cycle. I received a phone call from the delivery service early that morning asking me if I would mind taking said delivery earlier than my scheduled 4 p.m. time. Well, heck yeah. That was my excited response. So around 11:30 in the morning, a truck pulled up to the front of my house and one Peloton Basic bike was wheeled out from it. But there was one problem. Well, of course, there was a problem.
Yes.
Peloton had neglected to include the screws needed to mount the smart display to the cycle. I was given two options. The first one was to refuse the order. Well, I didn't like that option because I got a deal on the Peloton package I had ordered. And there was a chance that it would no longer be available when I got around to reordering it. Another reason I didn't like this option was because it takes so darn long for a Peloton bike to be shipped to the area I now reside in. I ordered the bike on November 12th, and the earliest delivery date was the 26th of the month, which got bumped to the 27th. I wanted and needed that bike right now. The second option was for Peloton to mail the missing screws to me and install the monitor myself, which was the option I chose. I mean, it's only four screws and the plugging in of a couple of connectors. Well, later that day, Peloton support emailed me saying that the missing screws would be shipped post-haste via FedEx and arrived to me as soon as possible. Well, Thanksgiving Day, I received a follow-up email telling me that the screws were on the way and would or should be here by Saturday. In the meantime, I used the Peloton app on my iPad in order to be able to check out the bike. Unlike the sole-branded cycle the Peloton replaced, I was able to adjust the handlebar to a comfortable height. The sole's maximum handlebar height had me bent over like those pro bicycle racers, which left me with a constantly sore back, which I got used to having. Unfortunately, the Peloton app doesn't connect with the bike at all, so the only thing I could do is get my heart rate from my Apple Watch. I found the Peloton bike to be a much smoother ride compared to the sole. Resistance for Peloton is 1 through 100, so I use the old click method of gauging my resistance. You know, one click equals 1 point of resistance?
Wrong.
Yeah, there's only 72 clicks to the resistant knob, which explained why I was getting my butt kicked even on the beginner rides I took. A problem I've run into concerns the cycling shoe supplied by Peloton. They're awfully narrow and no wide sizes are available from the company's website. To ride the Peloton bike, you have to click into the pedals using the Delta-style cleats. Well, I can click in with no problems, but clicking out is a major hassle, especially for my left foot. There's a screw on the bottom of the pedals that can be loosened that would allow easier connection to them, but Peloton warns against doing this. I'll give it a few weeks of break-in time before taking that action. The missing screw showed up late Saturday evening, and my son and I got to work attaching the monitor. This simple task turned out to be harder than I thought it would be, especially lining up the cables that connect to the monitor for the bike. So, about 20 minutes later, all was done. All that was left to do was turn on the display and register my bike. Well, the only problem then was that no matter how hard or long I pressed on the power switch of the display, the darn thing wouldn't turn on.
Oh, no!
My son gave it a try while I was fiddling with some cables, and he managed to finally get it to power up. After spending another 10 minutes updating the software and registering the cycle, I hopped aboard for my first ride on an actual Peloton cycle. My Apple Watch paired automatically once I started the class, just like it did while using the Peloton app alone. But none of the metrics like speed, resistance level, etc. were showing up on the screen.
What?
I paused the class and hopped off the bike and looked up the solution for this problem on Peloton's website. Now the fix was to power off the display, unplug the cycle, wait 30 seconds, and turn everything back on. After doing so, I couldn't get the display to turn on again.
What?
So I called my son back into the room, figuring he had gotten the display to turn on before, but this time he was unsuccessful. I then noticed that the bike itself wasn't getting any power, though the external power supply brick's light showed that it was on. I troubleshot the problem and found that the connector that plugs into the bike itself wasn't making contact. The connector is surrounded by a rubber covering. I guess that's in order to shield it from sweat. So I removed it from the connector, securely plugged it in, and was able to power up the display.
Yay!
I then got back on the bike and completed the class. When finished, I unplugged the cycle, waited 30 seconds, replugged it in, and successfully powered on the display. I did this in order to see if the problem was truly solved. Now I just have to touch the display to reactivate it. You know, nothing is easy for me. I pray that I won't have any problems in the future with the bike. Well, I enjoyed the class and look forward to taking more and getting back in shape. If I were younger, I'd buy something like a Schwinn AC power cycle or one of its competitors. The Schwinn is able to connect to the Peloton app and display all the metrics, but not store them, which isn't a big deal for me. The Schwinn goes for around $3,000 or more.
What the hell?
But what you're getting is a fitness center quality indoor cycle, which will last a lifetime. If you ever tire of using Peloton, you can just switch to Apple Fitness or any other program you want. The Spin Company, which is the one that started it all, also has some nice models. At my age, though, I don't think it will be worth the investment.
No!
The Peloton bike is high quality, but not up to professional fitness center quality. I feel that Peloton is the cheapest way to get a high-quality fitness center experience at home, despite the company's reputation of being too expensive.
Yes?
Peloton's instructors are the best around, much better than what Apple Fitness offers. Now let's see if I can shed the extra poundage I acquired since this moving experience I've been going through since last April started. Artificial intelligence, known to most as AI, in its current form is a flop.
What?
Yeah, I'm calling it. Why? Well, I'll tell you. Recently, I upgraded to the beta release of iOS 18.2. Now, this was supposed to be the big one, bringing Apple Intelligence a full implementation of writing tools and Playground, the prompt-based AI technology that generates images. The first thing I did was use photos of my loved ones and myself to generate these images. Most of the images did bear a resemblance to the person, some better than others. However, this AI cannot replicate headwear accurately, either getting it completely wrong or grossly oversizing it. As an example, a knit hat comes out as a large turban, while in my lovely wife's case, a giant headband. On Thanksgiving morning, I decided to generate a typical Thanksgiving dinner set upon a table image. The result I got can be called hilarious. The prompt I used was traditional Thanksgiving dinner table setting. Now I'll describe to you what was generated. Now picture a table in a kitchen where every available space around it had a bright orange pumpkin in place. Windowsills, shelves, sinks, all filled with them. The table was also filled with pumpkins. The meal was generated as two plates filled with leaves, grass, and alien-looking vegetables stacked on top of each other, with the top plate crowned by a misshaped pumpkin with turkey leg bones, no meat, sticking out of it. A utensil, which sort of resembled a fork, rest on the only available place beside the stacked plate pumpkin on the table. And that was the best of all the renders I generated. Earlier in the week, I used writing tools to rewrite paragraphs of a writing project I'm working on. What Apple Intelligence spit out required a rewrite by me in order to make it read like a human had written it. In other words, unnatural and not worth doing. I have used AI for quick replies to text messages, which I deemed as being acceptable. Though I chose to ignore suggestions given about half the time and just wrote the reply myself. To sum up, this whole AI thing is highly overrated and really isn't ready for prime time. Have you tried out any AI yet? I'd like to hear about your experiences and opinions of it. Just send me an email if you are so inclined. Entertainment news. Well, over this Thanksgiving holiday, I made a momentous decision. Well, it was momentous to me. I decided to cancel, yet again, my Spotify premium membership. Huh? I've done this once before a couple of years ago, just before I retired as part of my subscription pruning. This time it wasn't because of any pruning situation. I decided to replace Spotify with Amazon Music. That's right, Amazon Music. I just don't use Spotify enough to justify keeping the premium subscription. I watch a few Joe Rogan episodes here and there, mostly there, and once in a while I would listen to some old tunes from playlists I made about 5 or more years ago. Sometimes on long drives, I'd fire up the Release Radar feature to see what was new. You know, Release Radar is the only feature I think I'll miss. Then again, I'm unsure if it's still available, albeit with ads on the regular non-paid accounts. Since last month, I've been using Amazon Music more and more. Mainly because a lot of the podcasts I enjoy listening to are ad-free on the service. Amazon Music also works flawlessly with Apple's CarPlay, and that's something no other third-party audio listening app can do in my experience. At least amongst the ones I've tried, and I've tried a lot of them. Amazon Music's recent adding of audiobooks, which was last week, sealed the deal for me. I can listen to one complete audiobook per month versus the 15-hour limit per month that Spotify offers. I've been trying to get through the biography of the great band The Replacements. It's a long book and it's been 3 months since I started it and I'm still not finished with it. I keep running out of those 15 hours before I can. I'd rather be able to complete a book than have to break it up into parts. I haven't messed around with the playlists and other features of Amazon Music, but I'll get around to it. And when I do, I'll let you know my impressions of it. Podcast news. Things have been awfully quiet around the podcasting incorporated scene. I guess no news is good news. One thing that the big boys are pushing is for podcasters to move over to video, be it YouTube, Spotify, or both. Podnews.net and the No Agenda podcast have recently been talking about this subject. Both seem to be against it. The advantage of going to video is that you'll make more money if and only if the algorithm likes you. If it doesn't, well, nobody will probably find you. The disadvantages are that you can be demonetized from those platforms for merely saying the wrong word. Another disadvantage is that now you just won't be editing audio, you'll also be editing video. For me at least, I have enough trouble with audio and can't see myself having to edit video. You'd also have to invest in cameras and accessories, which, let's face it, many can't afford. If you're okay with these disadvantages, well, I say go for it. Me? I'll stick with audio only and the humble RSS feed for distribution. As a compromise, though, I'll be uploading an audio-only episode file to YouTube starting with this very episode. That is, if I figure out how to do so. And we'll just see how it goes. As far as this podcast goes, I really have no plans for buying any equipment or audio plugins.
Okay.
No, I'm serious this time. You know, I haven't purchased an audio plugin in over a month, no matter how many daily emails I get from these companies announcing sales. I would buy a new audio interface if I could find one with all the features of my Lewitt Connect 6 at a reasonable price. Yeah, I know Rode has the Rodecaster Duo, but I hear there's a lot of problems with it, and I just don't need the frustration. I would like to have a Universal Audio Apollo Twin Duo, but I'm not sure if it comes with some sort of noise gate plugin, which is a requirement for me. That's even though my recording space I have now is much more quiet than the last one. I would also like a new digital audio workstation, but none on the market were designed for radio and podcast recording like Hindenburg, which I use now. The ease of use of Hindenburg is key for me. Speaking of which, Hindenburg has recently gotten a new CEO, so I hope nice upgrades are in the pipeline. The music has started playing on this chilly December evening, which signals the wind down of this episode of the OFNT podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed making it for you. If you like what you heard, you can make a donation using the link in the show notes. Any and all donations will be greatly appreciated, and you can always reach me at ofntpodcast@gmail.com, and that's only if you're so inclined. I'd enjoy hearing from you. Yeah, I would. Remember, don't listen to what they say. Watch what they do. Hey, you know, it's freezing out there, so go home and warm up. And you can start by getting off my lawn. Stay skeptical. I'm out.
See ya.